That don't stop me from being me. Actually, I continue to be me, and they adjust to me. They always do.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. Only three games in the NBA on Tuesday. We're going to talk about that. We're going to recap the injury news that we had, a few, irritating ones from a fantasy point of view, and especially if you're a Chicago Bulls fan as well, and then preview an absolute monster 11-game slate in the NBA for Wednesday. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right, really, really good idea, Mr. Bolton. Let's move and start off, as we always do on this show.
Monstrous line of the night.
Could it be anyone else, really? It has to be Blake Griffin of the Detroit Pistons, who was huge in that overtime victory against the Philadelphia 76ers. Just big, a career night for Griffin. 50 points, 50, including 5 triples, 14 rebounds, 6 assists. He even blocked a shot, which is probably one of the more amazing things out of that line for Griffin. Fantastic. 57% on 35 attempts. The free throws, they weren't so great. 5 of 11 from the line, a real downer in that area. But overall, it's really hard to complain about Griffin's what he provided you here. He is the 14th overall ranked player and playing an astonishing 38 minutes per night. At some point, that will have to decrease. But we're seeing scoring up right across the NBA. We're seeing minutes up across the NBA as well, which is an interesting development I didn't necessarily think we'd see. We're seeing big minutes for lots of players, and Griffin is one of those. He is averaging 36 and 11, over 3 threes a game, almost 6 assists, and doing it on 53% shooting. Now we can expect the scoring, the rebounding, and the field goal percentage to dip as the season continues, and you should be rightfully worried about Griffin suffering some sort of injury. So if you can find a deal to trade him away, then that might be worth it. He's going to be a 20-point-per-game scorer, I think. I think he's going to hit a lot of threes. I think he's going to get a lot of assists. I'm just not certain of his ability to stay healthy. That's always the concern with Griffin. And there are a few things here that he is doing which aren't necessarily going to stick in the long run, like 36 points, 3.7 threes, hitting 61% of his triples, averaging 11 rebounds, which he hasn't got double-digit rebounds in about 5 seasons, so I do expect that to go down. But a lot of his numbers, as many players' numbers are in the NBA, up because of the elevated pace. And that's what even makes it more stunning, is the pace is up, but some players' minutes are through the roof as well. So playing more minutes more minutes, higher pace, which is not something you'd necessarily associate. So Griffo is your monstrous line of the night for Tuesday.
Waiver wire line of the night.
This goes to Frank Mason III. He is also the deep league guy of the night because he is rostered in only 1% of leagues. The Kings-Nuggets game was a blowout, so you're all going to be stunned. So take a seat. Dave Joerger screwed with his rotation. Yep. I know. We just never expect that from Joerger. We never expect the minutes to be all over the place, but they were. Probably only a one-off, knowing Joerger. He's likely to go back to a really rigid set of principles and common sense decisions. Mason, who was out of the rotation entirely last game, played 27 minutes, had 14, 5, and 7. He showed quite a bit in the preseason. He was slated to start opening night, never did, and then fell out of the rotation and was back with a solid enough performance here. I just don't know where he's going to fit when Bogdan Bogdanovic returns, because does that push Yogi Ferrell away from the 2 more to the 1? And then does he prefer Ferrell or Mason? He should be preferring Mason, because I think Mason's more of a longer-term prospect for this team. I think he's I'm not sure if he's better than Ferrell at this point, but at least he should be getting a look at some point. But it was a solid enough game for Frank, but nothing that makes me look at it and look at this situation and expect for him to put up solid numbers on a consistent basis. I just don't think that that's going to be the case for Mason. As I said, he had 5 minutes in the first game, 3 points, and then had 18 and 6 in 21 minutes in the second game. Nice. didn't play the third game. Your common sense level is obviously really rising there with Jaeger. And then he went for this 14-5-7 in his 28 minutes today. So he is all over the place in terms of what we can expect on a nightly basis. The assist rate is nice, 8.5 per 36 minutes, but it's all going to come down to what is his role going to be on this team. So we're not really looking at it for standard leagues, maybe deeper leagues. You know, you'd look in, an 18 or 20 team, and maybe there's something there for Mason, but it's far from a guarantee. With the older Jägermeister, I'm trying to think of the word. What's the word? Yeah, manning the controls. There it is. In Sacramento, as I mentioned, he is the deep leaguer of the night as well. I have to tell you about today's sponsor. And guys, hopefully it's not too many of you, but some of you. Do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? You can now increase your performance and get that extra confidence in the bedroom, and that's by visiting BlueChew.com. That's blue, just like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. So you know they work, those active ingredients do work. I used to be a pharmacist, so I'm well aware of how those ingredients work, and BlueChew takes it to another level. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as swallowing a tablet. And that is true. You know, you take a tablet, it can be a 30-minute onset of action, a chewable type situation. You almost cut that in half. That can really speed up. And in this sort of a situation, you want fast action. Well, I hope that is what you're looking for. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. No more in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, so they're cheaper than going to a pharmacy. And right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. That's it. BlueChew.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON to try it free. Blue Chew is a better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Let's move on to the next award of the day.
Young Gun of the Night.
Yes, it is another Sacramento Kings player. That's going to be a bit of a theme through these daily awards. Marvin Bagley III had a big game. 32 minutes for Bagley. Closed the game out in garbage time. 20 points on 11 shots. That's not going to stick. 82% shooting. 9 rebounds. 1-3. 3 assists and 5 blocks. Again, those block numbers are obviously pretty massive from Bags. He's been up and down, as all these Kings guys have, but that's 3 consecutive double-figure scoring nights. He had a 19-8, a 13-7, and now a 20-9. But it's those 6 blocks across the last 3 games that really stand out. He never was a big shot blocker at Duke. We saw him block some shots at a decent rate in Summer League, so it gives you a little bit of hope here, and it's all going to come down to what happens with his minutes. Can he keep the efficiency? He's shooting 60% from the field. That's going to dip. I've got no doubt about that. 64% on his two-pointers. That won't be able to stick. But if he can hover around 1.5 blocks, which is where he currently is, and be a 14-7 type of guy, maybe that's being marginally optimistic. I don't think it's that optimistic. Then he can be a decently valuable guy. Now, I place him behind guys like Ayton and Jackson and Wendell Carter Jr. in terms of the rookie big men. But he's been, you know, up and down, and I think at some point he's going to have to start over Nemanja Bjelica if the coach wasn't a dead set dead shit. And you know, had decided that he has got no idea about developing these guys or rotating players or doing the best thing for this team in the current and in the future. But again, not necessarily the Jägermeister's modus operandi. So Bagley was your young gun of the night. Have a look on the wire. Go and have a go at him. Have a grab. But remember, there's going to be a level of regression here. The blocks won't be this level, and the field goal percentage absolutely won't be able to stick at this amount. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Well, we're back in Sacramento again, and it's Buddrick Hield of the Sacramento Kings. 5 points with 5 rebounds and an assist. No steals, no blocks. It was an absolutely terrible performance from Hield. Just the 23 minutes for him, as again, him and De'Aaron Fox only played the 21 minutes in this one as well. Not a great night from Hield, and he has struggled outside the top 120 this season. I just don't understand why we can't get 28 or 29 minutes out of Hield. He's shooting well, 51%. 47% from three. I don't know what more you could ask there. The steal numbers, which I did talk about extensively with Hield in the preseason, and he came out highly ranked on the projections, and I, you know, obviously always stress, don't judge by number, look at the numbers, look at the actual projections and how it fits your team. And with steal numbers, if there's a variance there, numbers can change, or ranking numbers can change quite a bit. Hield had doubled his steal rate from his rookie year to his sophomore year. And at the moment, we're way back down at rookie level type steal numbers for Hield, even lower. 0.7 per 36 in his rookie season, 1.5 last year, 0.3 this season. So there is, he's still got an ability to improve, but it's more the minutes that are a concern. He's averaging still 14.5 points with two assists. He needs to get to the line more. He needs to, you know, get those steal numbers back up, and then the value will start to come. So if someone did drop Hield, I would grab him. But there is that concern that the steal rate may not be real from what we saw last season, which was a big reason that his value did jump up last season and he was on the cusp of the top 100. I expected more minutes from him this season. I probably should have known not to trust Jaeger to do the right thing with Bud. I still don't think that he's necessarily a great NBA player or anything like that, but he is better than Mason. He is better than Iman Shumpert. He is better than Yogi Ferrell, and they should be at least looking to see what they can get out of him, not running him 23 minutes a night. And today was a blowout, no doubt about that, but he played 23 minutes a night, or he played 23 minutes against the Thunder in a big win. He played only 27 minutes against the Pelicans in that loss as well. Started out well with 19 points in 32 minutes in the first game, and had 17 in each of the next two games, but today was a bit of a stinker. If someone does drop him, I would be adding Bud Hield to my team, and I wouldn't feel too much in terms of hesitation in doing that. The plus minus goats, the blue arrow, Jamal Murray, had your highest net rating of the day, plus 66 points per 100 possessions. Talked about him yesterday. He only played 19 minutes in this game. The shooting was going to come back. He battled through that sore leg and hit his shots. Amazingly, he still is a good player. So those people who dropped him, I know you don't listen to this podcast, but go tell your mates that dropped him that they're dickheads, because you should never be dropping someone off the basis of that. He will have some struggles as a shooter, and he should be solid as a top 50 guy again this season. And then on the negative side of the GOAT for the plus minus, Stan the Man Johnson, a negative 84.5 net rating. He has just not been good, really, at any point in his NBA career. Only 19 minutes today for Stan. He was outplayed by Ish Smith, who got a lot of those wing minutes in that two-point guard lineup. He's just struggling. He's the 295th ranked player this season, Stan. He's hitting 22% of his shots. I think he's hit only two threes for the season so far, 5 points and four rebounds. Your league has to be very deep. And I like to give guys three seasons, especially, you know, first-round type picks, especially top 10 picks. This is his fourth season. He's no good. Simple as that. I wouldn't be putting any faith in a big bounce or an improvement from Stan Johnson. He's still, I guess, relatively young, just 22 years of age, turns 23 after the season, I believe. I just don't have very much faith in him ever becoming a good NBA player or a good fantasy producer, and it looks like he's gone backwards so far. Maybe the toe issue that did plague him in the preseason is still a problem here, but yeah, it hasn't been good for Stan Johnson so far. Let's look at the injury news. Out of nowhere, Chris Dunn for the Chicago Bulls suffered an MCL sprain, and he's going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks. It's a tough blow if you don't have an IR spot, but it's very similar to the Fartin Will Barton situation. And that Barton situation actually got clarified today. Yesterday, we thought he'd be back in 6 weeks, and it got clarified that he'd be reevaluated in 6 weeks. So we're probably looking at 8 weeks for Barton. I think it's really hard to hold on to those guys in a 10-team format, especially if you don't have an injured reserve slot. Yeah, maybe they can be top 50, top 60-ish type guys. I think Barton's probably a little bit lower than Dunn. But having zeros on your team for that long, it's something you probably only reserve for a top 20, top 30 type of player. Maybe you add them 2 weeks out before they return, but holding on for 6 weeks is a pretty tough thing to do if other people are streaming aggressively. A weekly changes league, a roto league, you can put guys on your bench and you can feel better about it. Or if your team's super strong, you might be able to deal with that. If you've got a weekly games limit, you're able to deal with it. So there are different variations, but you have to really look at how your team is. And if you've got two injured guys, then you've got to drop one of them. You can't be holding two injured guys for a significant amount of time, which many people will be dealing with that combined Dunn-Barton injury, and that's not good. Jim Ennis of the Houston Rockets, actually back to Dunn. Cameron Payne, I think he's worth a look. I think he can be a I think best case scenario, he can be a top 80 player for the next 4 to 6 weeks, probably more settling in the 100 to 120 type of zone. Maybe he gives you 14 points and 5 assists with 2 threes, but you've got to deal with the field goal percentage. I do like Dunn, obviously. He struggled in one of the games earlier this year, had an okay second one. I think he's someone you should be looking at on the wire and see if he will make sense in your team and getting those 6 weeks worth of action out of him. Now, the question I had posed to me about a million times today is, Josh, Chris Dunn's out, do I add Cameron Payne or do I go and add Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? I obviously think that Gilgeous-Alexander is the better player and the better long-term guy for this season, but I think short-term you'll probably get a little bit more out of Payne for the next 4 or 5 weeks, but I'd probably be looking at adding Shai personally, dealing with maybe a couple of rough weeks, maybe 2 weeks, but I think at some point soon he is going to be, because Avery Bradley is just straight trash at this point. Shai is going to be getting 28 or 29 minutes, and I think that that would be the decision that I would make. Now, if Shai is already gone, I would add Cam Payne, but I got that question so many times today. Everyone was looking at those two guys as options. Jim Ennis is out for the next 2 to 3 games with a hamstring issue for the Rockets. Michael Carter-Williams is slated to start in his place. Ennis was only a deeper league guy anyway, so we're not rushing to go and add Carter Williams. The Undertaker. Dwayne Dedman. He is coming back on Wednesday. I like Dedman. I think he is a better player than Alex Len. I thought there was a chance if Len really thrived as the starting center that he could hold on to the starting job. I wouldn't say that Len has thrived. He's had one good game, a couple of stinkers. It could be a minute share. I would be looking at Dedman on the wire, although the first couple of games back could be a little bit rough for the Undertaker. So if you've got Len and you do want to make the switch for Dedman, I think that's pretty line ball. I think that's a bit toss of the coin because I don't know which way they're going to go in Atlanta. I would hope they would go with Dedman because he is a better player. So probably if I had that option in 3 leagues, I would take Dedman in 2 of them and I would take Len in another to hedge my bet. So it's not 100% Undertaker. If I had it in 1, I probably would make that move and get Dedman back in, but expect your low minutes for the first week or so and some shaky performances. But I do think that it will pay off. Other Atlanta Hawks news, the Baptist John Collins, a setback. He's not being reevaluated to November the 4th. So we're talking about another, you know, 2 weeks on his evaluation. So I think you have to assume about another three and a half weeks out for Collins. And much like I mentioned with Dunn and with Barton, that might be tough. Now, I would rather hold Collins over Dunn. I would rather hold Collins over Barton just because we're talking about half the timetable here. So I think you can probably, if it is only 3 weeks and it's 2 weeks until he's reevaluated, so I'd hold for those 2 weeks and see what they say. And if they say, yeah, he'll be back in a week, then you're fine. But if they say that, no, it's another 4 weeks, then you possibly have to move on. But I think that I would be holding Collins without an injured reserve spot at this point and just see what happens on November the 4th. And then Trevion Graham, who is rostered only in the very deepest of deep leagues, shout out to you in the Red Rock 30 Dynasty Leagues, he has torn his hamstring and he will be out for the next 2 months. This opens up opportunities for Rowdy Rodion's Kuroks and Janan Musa, the two Nets draft picks from this season. We've already seen a bit of Kuroks, who's dealing with an ankle problem and is out for the next game. But Musa is a very, very interesting fantasy option at some point in the future, and it'd be good to see an opportunity for him. And now, it's only going to be minimal, but it's good to see him out on the, it will be good to see him out on the court, you know, giving us an opportunity to see what he can produce. Guys, if your company is looking for a new way to reach customers, you can be mentioned in this spot right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on podcasts. Our demographic is 98% males. Where are the women? Let's get more women involved. And our listeners are more educated, they're better educated, and they are higher earning than your traditional media audience. If you are interested in getting your company to sponsor this podcast, email me, redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Let's move into these games now and look at the information and look at the three games that we did have across the NBA. The first one of those was the Philadelphia 76ers and the Detroit Pistons, an overtime victory for the Pistons. Ben Simmons didn't play, so Markel Fultz started at point guard. I thought he looked okay. 13 and 6 in 21 minutes, but 21 minutes, that's a real red flag to me. Brett Brown was going with TJ McConnell down the stretch over him, and if Fultz, even though he looked pretty solid, I thought, and probably his best game for the season, if he's not getting 32 minutes in an overtime game with Simmons on the shelf, pretty hard to hold on to him. Now, I do believe in his talent. I do believe he is going to become a good player, but is that going to happen this year? this season? I don't know. And my doubts on that are creeping up pretty high. And I think you might have to consider him. He look, on anyone's fantasy team, on 12-10 league, he's probably the worst player. And in that case, whoever your worst player is, you've got to be ready to move on from them to go and grab a high upside guy or to go and use it for streaming, even though at this point of the year, I'm not as big on streaming as what I am later in the season. I'm just trying to hold more for upside. But this is a real, real negative thing, I think, for Fultz, the way that he was used in this game. We'll see what happens tomorrow if Simmons is out again, but it's definitely leaning towards that drop zone. As for Timothy John McConnell, 10, 3, and 8 in 32 minutes. That's really short term if you're looking to, and if you, even if you add him, 11 games Wednesday, you're probably not going to activate him. Not much to see there. Embiid was amazing, 33, 11, and 7 with 3 blocks. Redick was great as well, 36, and 6 with 6 triples. I thought Redick could have a down year this season with how they were using Fultz, but he has been unbelievable so far this season. While Covington played 44 minutes and had 16 and 8, really filling up the box, and somehow Robert Covington is on waiver wires in certain leagues. I don't understand how that's the case. Dario Saric also benefiting from Simmons not being there, can't shoot at all at the moment apparently, 31% on his 16 attempts, but 14 8 and 5 with a steal and a block. But with Simmons back, his numbers will likely decrease. While Landry Shamet, he started in place of Simmons, 5 points in 24 minutes. It's good that he's in the rotation. Whether he remains there when Babyneck Wilson Chandler returns remains to be seen, but solid enough. And I do have to mention that Mike Muscala made his season debut for the Sixers, 5 and 2 with 2 blocks and a 3, 17 minutes. I think he's going to play Amir Johnson basically out of the rotation, and deeper leagues will want to pay attention to a shot-blocking, 3-point shooting big man, which is exactly what Muscala is. On the Pistons, I mentioned that Ish Smith and Reggie Jackson shared the court a lot. They did. 39 minutes for Reggie, 33 minutes for Ish. Just again, absolute bullshit the way that Stan Van Gundy treated Reggie Jackson in terms of playing time. I don't think Reggie's the best bloke. I don't think he's the best player. But to consistently limit him to 28 minutes per night because of some nonsense theory that you've got that point guard should only play 30 minutes a night is bad, bad coaching. Reggie had 23, 3, and 3 in 39 minutes, and he clearly needs to be on rosters in all leagues. While Ish Smith, 33 minutes, 21 points with 3 assists. Now, Ish shot 75% on 12 attempts, which isn't going to keep up, but he does have some 12-team appeal if they're going to play him high 20s in minutes each night. That's because Dwayne Casey, for as much as I'm praising him for playing Reggie Jackson, I'm going to shit on him for not playing the duck Luke Kennard at all. 2 points in 11 minutes for Kennard. The little dog Glenn Robinson didn't play at all. Kennard was a DMP CD last game, while Langston Galloway continues to get minutes in the 20s and continues to not be very good. So Kennard was an interesting breakout type of a guy that I thought has an opportunity. Obviously, Casey doesn't listen to this podcast, so he has not been as on board with getting the duck into these lineups. So I think you can look to move on from him outside of dynasty formats. Reggie Bullock had one of the more Reggie Bullock lines. You can have 17 points with 2 rebounds and 3 assists. Relatively efficient, but just doesn't do enough in other areas. The points are nice, the efficiency's okay, but I wouldn't consider him a guy that if he was on my wire, I would absolutely have to go and grab. Now, 14 and 16 teamers, yeah, look, you want that steady level of production and that steady scoring. But otherwise, he just is a real empty sort of producer. He's averaging almost 17 points per game, but he's still ranked outside the top 130. It's very Andrew Wiggins-y is the way that he plays. Andre Drummond, 14 and 16, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Absolute horrendous efficiency, 30% from the field, and got ejected on a dubious second technical against Embiid. He'll be back for next game, but some interesting performances there for the Detroit Pistons. Let's go to the next game. We've got the Clippers and the Pelicans, and guess what, guys? My first bet of the day hit. I had the Pelicans minus 6.5, and they won by 7. So there you go. Could not scrape in by a more narrow margin, but let's talk about these Clippers guys. Toby Harris, 38 minutes, another guy whose minutes are through the roof. He's the guy I believe I picked for most improved player, 26 and 9 with 2 triples. He's great. The Rooster absolutely cannot be on a waiver wire, 24 and 6 with a triple one. His ass will fall apart at some point this season, but until it does, you just ride it out. And the Table, 12 and 6, 2 steals and 2 blocks. Who knew that he was the best center on this team, apart from everybody? Another strong performance. They've got the Rockets up next, so he should be playing big minutes there, and he should be playing more minutes than Marcin Gortat every single game. Gortat was atrocious, 0 points in 12 minutes, not a starting caliber NBA player, not a 12, 14, 16, or even 18 team league fantasy guy. Avery Bradley, he's pretty close to that as well. 2 points in 29 minutes. He's absolutely terrible these days. He's a underrated shit bloke, and he should not be on 12, 14, or 16 team maybe. Shea, 9-4 for Gilgeous Alexander in 22 minutes and a triple one. That is nice production. I think he's a 12 team league guy. Well, Patrick Beverley finally bounced back. 12, 10, and 8 in 27 minutes. It was good to see that. Still only the 27 minutes. I want to see more Shea Beverley combinations and see them starting together. Beverley is fine to go and grab if he's floating on your wire, but remember, this is one good game and the others were all pretty stinky and the minutes still aren't very high. While Lou Williams, he's not getting anywhere near close to that playing time he got last season. So if you're expecting that, then you're not going to be pretty happy. And Boban played 1 minute. He did nothing in that time. He is not a 12-team league player, as I've mentioned plenty of times. They've got the Rockets next. It's going to be just as much of a disaster for him, I think, in that game. On to the Pelicans. Tone Davis. He's pretty good, this guy. 34-13, a steal and 5 blocks. The free throw percentage was not ideal. 67% on 15 attempts. But still, he was excellent. Alfred Payton, 26-6 with 3 steals. He is rejuvenated. The 64% shooting's not going to stick, but he's always been a decent enough field goal guy, and he looks so much better than he was with that trash we saw from him in Phoenix. Of course, he has to be on rosters. Well, Julius Randle, I thought he'd be getting 28, 29 minutes a night. He's not. He's still producing 18-5 in 22 minutes for Randle, but the playing time just isn't as high, while Mirotić had another double-double, albeit on poor efficiency, 18-12. Got to talk Drew Holiday because people are panicking. 8 points, but look at why he only got 8 points. He shot 2 of 15 and he shot 4 of 6 from the line. You go to a normal 40% shooting type of a night, so he was, 2 of 15 here. Say he goes 7 of 15, that's an extra 5 shots made, and say 4 of those are 2 pointers and one of them is a 3, that's an extra 11 points, and then he's on 19, 6, and 9 with 2 steals, and you're all there going for the old rusty trombone on Drew. So it was a bad shooting night. But 6 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, 38 minutes, buy low. And when I say buy low, it doesn't mean throwing your top 40 player like Tobias Harris or Drew Holiday. That's not buying low on him. That is, you are hoping that his manager is an irrational panic merchant and it's like, oh shit now, you can't do anything, there's no Boogie, what's going to be, Alfred Payton's taking all his playing time. People will think that. People that don't listen to this show, but people will think that. So you go low. You throw out Spencer Dinwiddie. Maybe that's big. Maybe you throw 2 low-end shitful point guards. Maybe you throw, not that Dinwiddie's shitful, but he's not a great fantasy contributor. Maybe you throw him and Bud Hield at the Drew Holiday owner. And they go, well, that's great. Not a great time to throw Bud out. Throw De'Aaron Fox out. Not a great time for Fox. He wasn't his best game, but I would be going, that's the sort of level of low I'm talking about when trying to get Drew Holiday. Even throw D'Angelo Russell out and see if you can get Drew back in exchange. He's a name that came to my mind. Reggie Jackson would be someone I would consider as well. He had a monster today. I would make that trade in a heartbeat if someone said, I'll give you Drew in exchange for your Reggie Jackson. Done. That's a buy low to me. Mike Conley for Drew Holiday isn't. That's not a buy low because they could be in the season as the 25th and 28th best players. That's not a buy low, right? You need to go, because then if you look into that trade, you say, I'll hold and we'll see what happens with my Mike Conley. Maybe Holiday's slump continues and Conley has a better season. You want to really try and take advantage of getting this value. And look, in 80%, 70% of the time, it won't work. But I have highlighted plenty of times dumb shit that goes down. Jamal Murray getting dropped to the waiver wire. Like, this stuff happens. It is not a buy low if the player has a reasonable chance of being better or the same as the season goes on. So bear that in mind. Let's go on to the next game, or the last game of the day, and that is the Sacramento Kings and the Denver Nuggets. I've covered a ton of these Kings guys, but let's talk Shumpert, who started again 12-2-3 with 2 steals. He wasn't able to maintain the insane efficiency from last game or the high block numbers. I think he's more of a steals streamer. I don't know if they're going to continue to start him. I would bloody hope not once Bogdan Bogdanovic returns. But Shumpert has at least elevated himself into an asset in some form of format, but not for your standard formats. Willie Cauley-Stein started the season playing 30 minutes a night and cannot get anywhere near that anymore. 11-6-3. The old Jaeger bullshit is back in business. While Nemanja Bjelica had 10-2-3 in 21 minutes. He's very much a fringe standard league player. My mate Justin Jackson, he always has these nights. 17 points in 28 minutes on 64% shooting, 3 rebounds and 3 assists. When the shot doesn't fall, he gives you nothing. He is a deeper league streaming type of a player who I don't believe is a starting caliber guy. Well, De'Aaron Fox, I've referenced how bad he was, but let's tell you exactly how bad. 6-1-4, 2 steals, 25% shooting, and 4 fouls in his 21 minutes. So the 4 fouls is what's really important there. And by the way, if you are holding on to Harry Giles, you shouldn't. Like, there's no reason to have him in a 12 or even a 14 team league. They're going really slow. He is struggling. He gets cooked defensively, and there is just no real upside for this season for Giles. So I would leave him on the wire. Now, as for the Nuggets, Nikola Jokic, only 23 minutes because the Kings just got trounced. 14-12-6 for him. The Blue Arrow had 19 points in 19 minutes with 4 assists, while Gaz Harris...
No!
18-3-5 with 26 minutes. He keeps getting better every season, Gary. He is really underrated, I think, by the general NBA community. Paulie Millsap did well offensively, 15-5 with a 1-1 in 22 minutes. He is still a standard league player, but I'm not going to suggest that you shouldn't at some point this season consider moving on, especially in 10-team formats. You don't do it now, but I do get the feeling that he may drift towards that. No Farton, Will Barton. So we had 23 minutes of Torrey Craig, 23 minutes of Trey Lyles, 25 minutes of Juancho Hernangómez. Lyles had 12-5. Juancho had 5-9 with 2 steals, and Craig had 7-1. The guy, the preference there would probably be Lyles than Juancho, but they're just not going to play enough or do enough to make them guys that you have to hold on to in standard type formats. Lyles scoring 12 is nice. Took him 12 shots. He was inefficient. He just doesn't look the same guy as last year. There was a lot of weird reports coming out about Lyles. He's going to be the team's third highest scorer. Just some nonsense like that from one of the well-respected beat reporters. It was never going to happen. It's clearly not happening, even with this opportunity opening up for him. So I think you can leave those guys out. And on low-volume days like today, Tuesday, with 3 games, you can stream in Juancho. You could stream in Lylesy, but these aren't guys that you need to be grabbing and holding on to and making sure you've got them for the remainder of the season. It's just not going to work that way, in my opinion. Let's move on, talk some daily fantasy now. We've got a big day ahead, but let's just recap today. DraftKings perfect lineup: Alfred Payton 42, Patrick Beverley 37.5. Covington had 34. Griffin had a monstrous 82 points. Joel Embiid, 64.25. JJ Redick, 49.5. Justin Jackson, 28.75. Marvin Bagley, 42.25 for a total of 380.25. And that cost $49,800. Over on FanDuel, Beverly, 34. Monty Morris, 28.1. JJ Redick, 46.2. Frank Mason, 24.8. The Rooster, 38.7. Solomon Hill, 26.6. Tone Davis, 70.6. Blake Griffin, 77.8. Joel Embiid, 64.7 for a total of 411.5. And that cost $59,500. Dues. Let's talk some DFS with these games. We're going to be focusing majorly on FanDuel today. The first one we're going to look at, we've got the Luka Doncic, Trae Young matchup. The Dallas Mavericks traveling to Atlanta. The Mavericks are favored by 1.5, and the total is 234.5. Amazingly, only the third highest total of the day. That is how high scoring is up. I think smashing the over on overs this early this season was a good thing to do. I think we're getting almost back to the point where we could be looking at some of these unders. And I say that even though the Sixers and Pistons put up 260 today. Injury-wise, The Undertaker is back. John Collins is out. And then you've got Alex Len listed as probable after having an elbow hyperextension. Let's talk point guards. Dennis Smith only had 9 points last time out. He's at 6,900. It's a good matchup defensively for him against Trae Young, but I wouldn't be relying upon him as a cash game option, but he is a tournament player. Other point guards, Barea's at 4,500. I don't really see massive upside there. While Trae Young, he crushed it last game, 56 points. So FanDuel just really screwed us by bumping his salary to 7,800. Can he get there? Yeah. Do I feel super confident in it? No. It is a good matchup for him, though, up against Dennis Smith and this Mavericks team. But that price point, it does sour me a little bit on Young. Shooting guards, Doncic is at 8,300. I love what Doncic has been doing. He's had a 41-point game already. I think another 40 could be coming his way, but I don't feel super confident about him at that sort of a salary. I think when you're looking at it, it's more going to be for GPPs. The likelihood of him getting to that is probably less than 50%, and that doesn't make it a good cash scenario. Wes Matthews also had a big game last time. He's at 5,400. Not really certain. It is a good matchup against the Hawks, clearly. I don't hate it for the floor. He's got a low score this season of 25, which is pretty nice. And then if you want to go flyerish, Kevin Huerta, who dropped 36 last game against, who did the Hawks play? Someone that they shouldn't have beaten. Anyway, I completely forget who they were playing against. But Huerta at 3,600, 3,900, and he had 36 points last game. He is an upside-ish type of guy. Bazemore's at 6,700, and while he played well, I think that might be too high for him. At small forward, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. Man, can we just get these guys' minutes up? He's playing well, he's scoring well, but the minutes just aren't high enough. 7,200. I probably feel safest with him in terms of anyone in this game with cash. So I think he's fine to look at here. You've got Finney Smith at 4,300 and DeAndre Bembry at 39. Very little to appeal there. The power forwards, Powell, Poitras, Kleber, Spellman, the Wizard. The only one there who's really been consistent is Dwight Powell, whose lowest score this season is 28 and his highest is 29. But he is priced up at 4,700. I don't mind using him with Dirk and with Harrison Barnes both out. I think that is okay to consider for Powell, especially if you're just looking for that cheap option on FanDuel, who could return 6 or 7x value. The centers gets pretty interesting. DeAndre Jordan's at 8,300. He had a pretty decent game last time out, 37 points, has done well against the Hawks in the past. Alex Lennon-Deadman is a matchup. I think he's okay there. I'm not sure his ceiling is all that high, but I think at 8,300 there is some value there to use him in cash with a solid enough floor. Well, Len and Deadman, 58 and 5,200 respectively, I don't really feel super interested in using either of those because, both of their presences are going to affect the other one. On DraftKings, Doncic is much cheaper, 7,100, sorry, so I'm all for using him there. I think that Kevin Huerta at 3,300 is a good upside option, and Kent Bazemore and Taurean Prince, 53 and 6,500 are strong DraftKings options as well. Trae Young has bumped up, not as aggressive as on FanDuel, and Jordan at 8,000, not quite as appealing as what he is on FanDuel with the pricing. The next game, the Brooklyn Nets and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs are favored by 3, and the total is 229. The big question here is, what is Ty Lue going to do to screw it up? Because apparently, this is the report from The Athletic, is that Ty Lue went to J.R. Smith, he went to Kyle Korver and to Channing Frye and told them, guys, we're going young, you're not going to be in the rotation. Now, that wasn't communicated to the rest of the team. Kevin Love, in the last game in the fourth quarter, asked the coaches, hey, why aren't JR and Korver playing? And they went, someone told him they're out of the rotation. And the other dumb thing is, he kept those guys in uniform and left David Nwaba, a young player he'd like to try out of uniform, so an interesting inactive decision. So you make that decision that JR and Korver aren't going to play. You dress them, don't play, but you don't tell the players on your team that's going to be the case. So that's good. You tell those guys, but not the other guys, so that's nonsense in itself. But then, after one game, the report is that Ty Lue is putting them back into the rotation. And in the 10 guys that were working out, like the first versus second team at practice, both J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver were involved there. So who misses out? You'd have to think the number one guy to miss out in that rotation is Sam Decker. But at the moment, we're going George Hill, Colin Sexton as the point guards. We're going Rocket Rodney Hood and Jordan Clarkson as the shooting guards. We had Tristan Thompson and Larry Nance in the front court. We had Kevin Love, Chetty Osman starting. We had Sam Decker there. Yeah, who is the guy, who is going to miss out for both Smith and Korver to come in? Don't tell me they're going to cut Chetty Osman's minutes down. That would be a disaster. And that's why I have worry here about what on earth this guy is going to do. Is he going to start playing 32 minutes a night for Tristan Thompson? Is Ante Zizic going to be out of the discussion? There's just so many things that are up in the air here, and I'm really interested to see what Lue does, because if this is right and he's reintroducing Smith and Korver to the rotation, that's who Trae Young killed, the Cavs, sorry, back to that one. If he's reintroducing them back to the rotation, then where are we? What are we doing here? The team is terrible. These guys are, Korver's still solid, but they're not helping anyone really. I don't get it, and there is a legitimate risk that a poor decision is going to be made here by Ty Lue. So in saying that, On FanDuel, Colin Sexton is at 3,900. That is worth throwing into a GPP. He might be out of the rotation already because he has been legitimately bad. And if Lou is, you know, valuing playing well over the right thing for the team, then maybe he is out of the rotation. Clarkson moves over to be the primary backup point guard and Smith moves into that backup shooting guard role. But drop the lower score on FanDuel. Good matchup against the Nets for Sexton. You see if he can do something, but I'm not having a huge amount of faith in it. George Hill's at 5,400. I think his floor is decently solid, especially if we're going more veteran heavy here. Spencer Dinwiddie, 5,600, has been solid enough. I just don't really buy into the massive upside with him. Maybe for cash it could fit in. Well, D'Angelo is at 7,100, possibly a little bit high, but he has had a good record against the Cavs. He's averaged 38 points the last three times against Cleveland. Not ready to look at him as a cash must roster guy, though. Rocket Rodney Hood, 4,700. Of course, that's only for tournaments, while Caris LeVert, my man, 6,900.
Giggity!
He's been great this season. He is shooting 65% from the field, so expect that to drop. I think he's actually, at that price, I think he might be a fade. Now, for as good as he's been, he is only averaging 38 points so far this season, and that's fine. And at 6,900, 38 points is a win. It's above value. But 38 points is coming on 65% shooting. So if he has a 42% shooting night, does he give you 32 points? I would hope for a guy shooting that much out of his skin that he gives you 45, 46 points. And you go, well, he's well above that price. And if the shooting comes down, I'm still okay. But if the shooting does come down, you know, I'm a bit worried. It's a good matchup for him. But I think that price just might be, it might be a little bit high. But in saying that, it has already come down $500 from where it was last time at 7,400. The Blue Swimmer, Jordy Clarkson, Jumpin' Joe Harris, Kyle Korver, they're your other shooting guards. I don't mind Harris at 4,400. I think he sticks in the starting lineup ahead of Crabb. I think there is some value there. He's been pretty solid so far this season. We know that there is, Shabazz Napier will be back for this game. Don't know if he's going to be in the rotation. We know Rowdy Roddy Kuryuk is out. Damari Carroll is out. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is going to be returning here as well. Small forge Chetty Osman, 6,900. He's been, you know, around that sort of mark, but much like LeVert, I'm thinking is it a little bit too high now? He's averaging 33 points this season, not enough at 6,900. If I had to take one of those guys, I would probably feel better about taking LeVert than Osman, but I think they might just be a little bit overpriced at this point. And Larry Nance, the old small forward, Larry Nance, $5,000 for him. I don't trust him at this point coming back from the ankle injury. At power forward, Hollis Jefferson's at 6,000. No way I'm using that first up. While I do like Kevin Love a lot, 8,500 for Lovey. He is averaging 43 this season. I think, you know, a 40-plus night is what you'd expect from him against the Nets. Happy to use him in cash and in tournaments. At center, Jarrett Allen, 6,400. He's been a little bit up and down, only 11 points last time out for Allen, but he has had a 39-pointer. 6,400 feels like it's a little bit too high. I'm not really worried about Larry Nance or Tristan Thompson limiting him too much, but I just think that salary might be marginally too high. And Thompson and Ed Davis, I don't think we need to care too much about them. On DraftKings, Osman at 58. You're much happier with that price over there. Colin Sexton at 3,900, the same sort of story. George Hill at 48, I think, is solid. And D'Angelo Russell at 6,300 is in a pretty decent spot, not like his pricing on FanDuel. Now, LeVert at 6,800, I steer even further away from him at that price over on DraftKings. Let's go on to the next game. We have got the New York Knicks and the Miami Heat. The Heat are favored by 8, and the total is 224.5. Derek Jones Jr. is listed as questionable. Lance Thomas is probable. Hassan Whiteside, who missed practice, is probable. Who else have we got here? The Duke, Wayne Ellington, is unlikely to play, while Justice Winslow looks like he will make his season debut at point guard. Frank Ntilikina, 4,500. The minutes are there. The production is not in a tournament. You could look at it. But I don't really like it against Miami. While Tyler Johnson, down to 3,500 minimum salary play for Tyler. He has been dreadful, but I think that he would be worth investigating as a tournament type of guy because he could give you a 24 or a 25. The Knicks are going to be a high pace, up tempo sort of a team. So I think that we can look at Tyler as a tournament option. The iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, is at 6,500. A really solid floor from Dragic. Nothing to really stop him from doing that again against the Knicks. I think he's okay as a cash type guy. Shooting guards, Scooter Magruder's at 4,500. How much does Justice Winslow impact him? Still no Jim Johnson, but Winslow could be an impact. He has been crushing it so far this year, Magruder. 4,500 is a decent enough price. I'd feel all right about going back back to him against the Knicks. Well, Timmy Hardaway, 6,700 for Tim. I think the Heat defense is probably going to limit him a little bit. He has struggled against them in the past. I think that salary might be a bit too high. Damo Dotson, 4,100 for Damo. He has been playing well, 30 points last game. If Rugged Ronnie Baker is struggling or is actually still Rugged Ronnie Baker, then Dotson should be in the rotation ahead of him. And he's had a couple of 20-point games in a row. So I think that at 4,100, you could do a hell of a lot worse than throwing Dotson into a lineup with a 30-point upside at 4,100. That's not a bad way to go about it. Alonzo Trier not really doing what we would hope. Dotson's actually doing what you would hope Trier would do. Joshie Richardson's at 6,900.
Giggity!
So many of my favorite guys at 6,900. A real stinker from Josh last game. He only had the 12 points, but he is a 40-point upside guy. I do worry that if the shooting's not quite there like last game, there is a lot of variance in what he does in that regard, but he still can contribute in those other categories. I think he's a strong tournament play with some cash value, but the other small forward I do like more in cash is Mario Hezonja. Now, I could come to regret this because Fizdale could completely dick it around again, but Hezonja played 30 minutes last game, had 31 points, looked good, 4,700. He's better than Lance Thomas. He's better. He's better player than Frank Ntilikina at this point, and he should be getting those minutes and being able to produce. Justice Winslow, I think I'll leave him in his first game back. The power forwards, it's only Kelly Olynyk and Noah Vonleh. I don't really see much there. Vonleh at 4,300. At minimum salary, Vonleh would have been nice. He's like a 20-point per game guy, but at 43, I don't see the point of it. And at center, Enes Kanter, 7,200. Big minutes, big production, has done well against the Heat before, averaging 41 points in 27 minutes the last three times out. I really, really like Kanter in this matchup against Hassan Whiteside. While Whiteside at 7,900, I think it's way too expensive for Whiteside personally, and that is really strongly on the fade list. Bam's at 4,500, and I don't think that we need to get too interested in Mr. Adebayo. On DraftKings, Kanter again, 7,000. Absolutely love that one. Ntilikina at 41, some upside, but of course we're only tournamenting that. While Joshie Richardson at 6,500 and Goran Dragic at 6,200. They have a bit of appeal on DraftKings. Hezonja at 45, also strong. I didn't talk about Trey Burke. I think he's a bit overpriced. 5,700 for Burke over on DraftKings. Strong game last game, but it was on 40% usage and only played 22 minutes and still only netted you 32 DraftKings points. So it's not a huge night for him. I'm not massively into Trey here. While Timmy Hardaway, again, is probably a little bit overpriced on the old DraftKings. Next game, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Toronto Raptors. What will the Raptors do with their starting lineup? Will we get Valanciunas? Will we get Ibaka in at center? I think it'll be Ibaka because the trend has been if the center is a stretchy type of big who will go out and hit threes, then Ibaka starts the game. And that's exactly what Karl Anthony Towns is. So I imagine we'll have Ibaka starting alongside Pascal Siakam to match up on Taj Gibson. And then we'll have Valanciunas coming in on the bench to try and dominate there. And the Jedi OG Anunoby off the bench as well.
Hello there.
Injury-wise, DeLon Wright is questionable and Andrew Wiggins is also questionable for Minnesota, so throwing a guy like Josh Okogie into a GPP lineup would be very interesting in that FanDuel low-score drop contest because he'll play 30-plus minutes if Wiggins is out. Otherwise, he won't be in the rotation. Wiggins said he'd be fine to play in Toronto, but officially listed as questionable. As for DeLon, if he doesn't play, it gives a boost to Fred VanVleet and to Norm Powell. If he does play, it probably just limits a little bit of the value on Freddles. Speaking of VanVleet, he's at 4,900. It might be a little bit too high if DeLon actually plays. And then you've got DeLon at 39. Kyle Lowry at 84, who's been incendiary. 47 points last game from Lowry. I don't mind him at 84. I think that's a fairly solid cash play. The Timberwolves' defense has been relatively atrocious. Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
I'm not sure he's going to be able to slow down Lowry the way he's playing. But Lowry is also doing it on the back of some pretty impressive shooting, which has an opportunity to drop off. As for Teague, 6,500. There are better ways of spending 6,500 than doing it on Jeff Teague. Well, Derrick Rose is down to 4,500. Great game from him the other day. And then last game, just the 23 FanDuel points at 4,500, which is not bad. It's not far off where it needs to be. And if Wiggins is out, I would definitely be looking at Rose, even in cash if Wiggins is out. But more tournament-y if Wigo happens to be playing. The shooting guards, Dan Green's at 49, a bit up and down for Greeny, but we know he's a 35-40-point upside potential type of player. Not really sold on the floor, though, while Butler is at 8,900. Jim has been crushing most games. 30 points last time out wasn't great for him. But I think at 8,900, you'd have an element of confidence in him. It's not the same level of confidence that you have with the fun guy.
I'm a fun guy.
Kawhi Leonard, 9,400, historically has just completely ripped the Wolves apart, averaging 55 over the last three. The price is still not where it needs to be. I'm all about Kawhi here as a cash guy and as a tournament player. Wigo is at 5,900. Now, there are two teams that Wiggins plays well against, the Raptors and the Cavs. This is obviously the Raptors with a 37-point average over the last three times against them. I would be willing to throw Wiggins into a tournament. Now, we don't know about the thigh issue at this point. If that was ready to go, would I consider him for cash? I think I might, based on an historic type of record against this Raptors team. Now, of course, the Raptors team didn't have Dan Green and Kawhi Leonard being thrown onto him, but they're going to have other people to focus on, like Jim Butler. They're going to, more of their focus is going to go there, hopefully opening things up for Wigo in Toronto. So I think he's not a bad play here. The Jedi is at 3,700. That's no thanks for me. At power forward, Serge Ibaka, 5,400, has been really solid. Lowest score of 25 so far this season. Is the upside high enough for Serge? I think he probably is worth looking at as a 30-point type of guy, and that's not a bad cash play. Siakam, nah. Taj, also no. At center, Townsie, 9,200. Got a little bit back on track last game with 40 points, but still hasn't really hit the heights that we know that he can. I think the matchup here is okay for Towns, but I wouldn't be fully invested in him in a cash game scenario. While Valanciunas, 5,500, man, I think it's too high. I just don't know what the minutes are going to be. You can't rely on it for cash, but he could come out and drop 40 in 20 minutes like he did last game by destroying bench units. So there is some upside there for Valanciunas, and I think his ownership levels or his roster level will be fairly low. Let's move on to this one. That was FanDuel. Let's move on to this one on DraftKings. Towns is at 8,200. I really, really like that for Towns at that price. I think he can get that value back pretty comfortably. Lowry's at 76, also strong. While Kawhi, not quite as good on DraftKings as on FanDuel. 8,700 is still a pretty nice price tag. And the 5,800 for Jeff Teague is also a more reasonable price over on DraftKings. The next game, we take a look at the Utah Jazz and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are -2.5 and the total is 220. Both teams are struggling at the moment. We know that Jim Ennis is out. We know Chris Paul is suspended. We've got Nene and Marquise Chris both listed as questionable for the Rockets as well. So a few concerns here, no doubt. At point guard, ravishing Rick Rubio, $6,000. He did not play well against them in the playoffs. Now, he's been up and down this season. I don't think that's interesting. Dante Exum, the same. Although you could envisage a scenario where Exum's minutes get bumped to try and match with Harden at the expense of Rubio, and maybe that can make him into a tournament guy. But he's going to be putting so much focus defensively, I'm not sure where he generates the offensive numbers. Michael Carter-Williams is minimum salary. He's going to start. And we saw from his time in Philadelphia that he can rebound, he can assist, he can steal, he can block, and he can do some things. Now, he's generally not a good NBA player, but a minimum salary starter who could be pushing to 30 minutes, probably not, but could push to 30 minutes, I think you have to consider that as an option. Other shooting guards, you got Jim Harden, 11,900. Love Jim here. The Jazz are playing up tempo, but Harden has struggled a bit against Utah in the past. They're not quite on song as they have been before. I think that a 55 from Harden is on the cards. While the Donnie Mitchell, $8,000, has really stunk. He struggled against Houston regular season last season. The playoffs, he put up some big numbers, but I'm not really feeling him to bounce back at that sort of a salary. Eric Gordon's at 56. I really like Eric Gordon when Chris Paul's out, and this is no exception. 33 points last time out. Another 30-point one would return that value pretty quickly. Grayson Allen, Alec Burks, no. Small forward, Gerald Green, upside play, 3,700. No Ennis, no Paul. Someone's going to get minutes. We know Green can get hot and have these weird bursts. 3,700, I like it. Melo at 46, nothing more than a tournament for Carmelo Anthony. But he does have that ability to hit shots. And if for some reason it starts to happen, maybe this is the time. Jay Crowder's at 46. I love what Crowder's been doing. I think he's got a pretty safe floor. More minutes than Derek Favors pretty much every game. Production's been fine. A 27-point average, which is fine at 4,600. I think he's pretty safe. Well, Jingle and Joe, did not shoot well last game at all, still put up 30 points. That's very encouraging for Ingles. 6,600. The salary is probably a little bit too high for Ingles here, but a 35-point performance, it would not be a shocker. In fact, that's been more of the norm for Ingles this season. So I think you can consider him and you can look at him. I'd likely go a different direction, though. PJ Tucker's at 45. If there's no Nene, if there's no Ennis, if there's no Chris, then Tucker's going to play a lot of minutes. He hasn't really produced much this season, but I think he's a sneaky guy to have a look at in a tournament. While Derek Favors, I'm just not interested at all. My man Isaiah Hartenstein had 11 points in his last game. He's a minimum salary guy. Let's probably leave him alone. While Clint Capella at 8,000. Capella can struggle with Gobert. They have bumped his salary a lot, but I do think that there is a 40-point player here in Capella. I think it's not bad looking at it while Gobert is at 8,100. Interchangeable between those two guys. You'd probably look at Gobert as a more reliable option than Capella, but personally, I'd probably look at Capella more as a tournament sort of a player. Over on DraftKings, Capella at 6,600. I'm all about that on DraftKings. That is a great price. Well, Gerald Green, 35, is a great tournament guy. Carter Williams, Harden, those guys still appeal in a similar way on DraftKings. PJ Tucker, the same. Eric Gordon at 58 might be priced a little bit too high on DraftKings in comparison to where he is on FanDuel. The next game, the Charlotte Hornets and the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are underdogs. The Hornets are favored by 3. The total is 231.5. No Chris Dunn, as I mentioned earlier. So Cameron Payne will likely be the starting point guard. Maybe we get some Shaq Harrison or Ryan Archer-Jackano in there as well. Payne is at $3,700. I think it's really hard to avoid him in cash and in tournaments. His ownership level, again, I've got to find a better word for that, is going to be, I think it's going to be pretty high in cash. I do like using Payne here, though, at that salary. And then on the other side, Kemba Walker, $8,400. He's been great. He's averaging 46 a game. The Bulls' defense is pretty much non-existent. I think you should feel pretty safe with using Kemba Walker at that sort of a salary. He's been consistent. He's been doing it every game. For some reason, his salary has dipped down by $500. You know, nothing to really, or no one, with Chris Dunn out especially, no one is going to be able to stop Kemba Walker. Justin Holiday's at 5,000. Back-to-back 37-minute games for him. Really, you know, and with Chris Dunn out as well, he's going to have to be used defensively a little bit more as well. So I think that he's not a bad cash type of guy. Well, Zach LaVine, 7,700. The shooting won't stick, but he is getting as many attempts as he wants. And I think that he's a relatively solid guy at 7,700. Malik Monk's at 48. Tournament only there for Monk, I believe. Well, Jeremy Lamb's at 52. And I'm not really feeling too highly or too strongly about either of those guys. Nick Batum's at 6,500. Hasn't been the greatest start for Batum, but I'm banking on the Bulls being able to ignite him. I think that he is worth looking at for cash. Jabari's at 58. A strong game from last game. Jabari, he had 27 points, only 24 minutes. I just don't really buy into him being better than he was last game and exceeding that number. The power forwards, Wendell Carter Jr., 5,200. Hasn't really got it going yet, but the minutes were encouraging last game. 32 minutes, only 21 points. At 5,200, I think you got to look at him for tournaments. And then you've got Punchbob Shiploke, 6,900 for Portis. I think it's too high, and I would only be looking at it for tournaments. Marvin Williams, no thanks. Center, Bill Hernan Gomez, 4,400. Cody Zeller, 4,500. Robin Lopez, 3,500. I think you should find your centers in another game. Over on DraftKings, a lot of value here. I think Wendell Carter at 4,000 is pretty tough to avoid. He hasn't really given you back the sort of numbers that you would hope for, but I think there's a great opportunity. I love Batum at 55, Justin Holiday at 45, Payne, Levine, Parker, they're all, you know, relatively fairly priced, while Kemba at 8,400 is maybe just going a little bit too high given the more constrictive DraftKings cap at 50,000. He has been great, obviously averaging 49 points so far, but that one might be just a little bit too high up at the 8,400, a $500 increase from the last game for Kemba Walker. Let's look at the Spurs. They host the Indiana Pacers. The Spurs are favored by 2.5, and the total is 213. Jakob Poeltl was demoted from starter, and he was out of the rotation. Will he be back in the rotation with a matchup against Sabonis and Miles Turner, or will it be Dante Cunningham? I guess that's the bigger question here. Sabonis is fine to play after having a knee problem across the weekend. For the point guards, Pat Mills at 3,900, Darren Collison at 46. I'd fade both of those guys. Corey Joseph and Bryn Forbes. If I'm going to take anyone, it will be Forbes in a tournament, but I'm not really feeling any of those point guards. Victor Oladipo is a shooting guard, 8,200. Hasn't quite been at the level we would hope for Oladipo. This is an okay type of matchup. The Spurs games have been relatively high-paced as well, weirdly enough. Now, I'm not sure that it necessarily will be in this one, but I do think that Vic is worth a look, but far from a lock or a must roster type of a guy. DeRozan at 8,200, I would take DeRozan over Oladipo. He is taking on a lot more of the playmaking. I think he had 14 assists last game in a 64-point performance in that overtime game against the Lakers. So I think that he at 8,200 is a better value proposition. The small forwards, Bojan Bogdanović and Rudy Gay. I think that Bogdanović is your tournament guy. Gay is more of a cash safe-ish type floor, but even then, not really feeling any of them, while Tyreek Evans has dropped all the way down to 5,000. I wouldn't hate actually just getting Evans, putting him into a tournament, and seeing if they give him back to 27 or 28 minutes. He hasn't gotten there at all so far this season, but could this be the opportunity where you can go contrarian against Tyreek? Dante Cunningham started last game, had 28 points in 29 minutes. That's worthy of a look. If we hear he's going to start, fine. It's a low price. It's a tournament type option. If you get 28 points at 3,700, you're really happy with that, you know, 6, 7X type of value. That's the sort of thing that can really help you build out the rest of your roster. Thaddeus Young, 4,900. That's a no from me. Sabonis at 49. I'm not really feeling too interested there. Well, LaMarcus Aldridge, 9,100 now. Obviously crushing it this season, backed by that 62-pointer against the Lakers. I think that is too expensive for me personally, and I'd leave it alone. At center, Miles Turner, 55. That's a no from me pretty strongly. Jakob Poeltl and Kylo Quinn. I think we'll leave those centers alone in this one as well. On DraftKings, nothing super really stands out to me. Oladipo at 7,800 is probably the pick of the bunch. DeRozan at 79, also relatively appealing. The 85 for Aldridge might be a little bit too expensive at this point, but no real, you know, huge standouts, I don't think, over on DraftKings for this game. The next one we have a look at, we have got the, who's the next game? It is the Philadelphia 76ers and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Sixers on a back-to-back. We don't know the spread at this point at the time of recording. Ben Simmons, we don't know his availability after missing today's game. If he is out, then we're looking at TJ McConnell. We're looking at maybe Fultz back to a GPP, but more value for Šarić, more value for Embiid, more value for Redick, and more value for McConnell there as well with Landry Shamet, maybe a tournament guy. If we have a look at the start by looking at the point guards here, if we start with Simmons, he's at 10,000. I wouldn't want to use him with a stiff back at that sort of a salary, while Eric Bledsoe, 7,700. It's been a strong start to the season for Bledsoe. That price on FanDuel is probably marginally a little bit high, and I think I would fade that, especially if Simmons is playing. McConnell, 3,900, a great or an appealing GPP sort of a guy. He had 25 points today in his 35 minutes. It is something there with him, but I think there are some better, cheaper options around. While Shamet at 3,700, probably tournament maybe if you're constructing multiple lineups. Malcolm Brogdon, 5,800. I see no upside in Brogdon. Maybe it's fine for cash. The minutes are going to be there, but I just don't see any tournament upside. While Middleton is crushing at 7,600 for Chrissy, absolutely someone that you should be looking at across all types of scenarios. DiVincenzo, Fultz at 58. Again, as I said, GPPs. Well, JJ Redick, really, really strong. 46 today. He's at 5,200. I think if Simmons is out, you really have to look at Redick as a pretty strong cash option. Small forwards, Bob Cove, 5,900. Tournament, if Simmons plays, I think cash if Simmons is out. And then you've got Yanni, 11,700. Well, he is always a cash play at that sort of a salary anyway. If he's coming in at 12,500, it's a little bit tough. 11,700, I think that's worth looking at. At center, Embiid, 10,400. Just crushing it every night. It's a back-to-back. I don't think they should be worried too much about that. I think we're looking at a 50-plus, 55-plus for Embiid. Really, really tough to go past him. While Lopez is at 5,600, a bit of a breakout game last game for Lopez. Still not fully convinced that we can rely upon it every night, so that would make him a tournament player to me. Mike Muscala, Ersan Ilyasova, other couple options, but I don't think we need to be too invested in them. On DraftKings, Lopez at 4,600 is very appealing for tournaments. Brogdon at 51 has that cash floor. I like Bledsoe, Middleton, and Embiid quite a bit, as well as Giannis at 11,300. But I think Giannis at 11,300 is more appealing to use on FanDuel than what he is on DraftKings. Let's go to the next game, the Memphis Grizzlies and the Sacramento Kings, the Ben McLemore Bowl. The Grizzlies are favored by 3 points and the total is 219. Is it time for Kyle Anderson? Dylan Brooks is doubtful and likely to miss the next couple. Chandler Parsons is out already. Or is Kyle Anderson's heel still bothering him? Or is JB Bickerstaff that shit of a coach? I think we're going to get a definitive answer. Or maybe we won't, because there's two reasons why he might not play. But this is an opportunity for Kyle Anderson to get that starting spot back and hopefully never give it back up. At point guard, De'Aaron Fox, 7,800. A real stinker from Foxy today. But I do think that he can bounce back and he shouldn't get into foul trouble against the Grizzlies. I think he is worth rostering. Shelvin Max at 42. Not much for me to like there. While Mick Conley's at 7,700. I think against the Kings, them on a back-to-back, I think that Conley at 77 has a relatively safe floor. He was killing it the last time out, had 45 points. I'm okay with him. At shooting guard, Marshawn Brooks at 3,700. Well, there's no Parsons, there's no Dylan Brooks, so someone's going to get a boost. So I think you look at him as a tournament guy. Garrett Temple at 39. I think there's I don't think Garrett Temple's that good, but I think his cash floor here is very strong with all these absences as well. He's going to be playing most likely 30-plus minutes in his revenge game. And Budrick Hield is at 5,900. I don't know what to do with Jaeger. I think there's a bounce back coming here for Hield. It's a decent enough matchup for him, but there's still some concerns over what Jaeger's going to do. Kyle Anderson's at 4,100, a lovely tournament option. There is an opportunity here. Now, is it just his heel dicking around? Does Bickerstaff hate him? Did he forget how to play entirely? These are all questions that remain to be answered, but I think it's a good tournament play for Kyle. While Nemanja Bjelica at 5,300 didn't do too much today, but he's worth a tournament shout at least. Bagley at 5,000, I'm in on that. That's cash, that's tournament, fine. While Triple J is 6,500, maybe a little bit too highly priced, Jaren Jackson, but he's going to be starting. I think he can produce. You know, he could have a 3 or 4 block game, which hasn't really been a thing for him yet in the NBA, but that could happen, and he could really smash through that. I'd feel more comfortable using Bagley than Jackson, mainly because of that salary discrepancy between them. At center, Cauley Stein at 7,200, too expensive, especially with the way he's being used, while Gasol at 7,700, crushed at last game. Wouldn't feel super confident in a cash game, but in tournaments, I think there's something there. Bunch of guys on DraftKings here. I think Cauley Stein, Fox, Hield, Bagley, Jackson are all fairly solid at their salaries. I love Cauley Stein at 5,600, even with the dicking that Jaeger's been giving him. Shelvin Mack, I think, is an okay upside guy with the injuries. Garrett Temple and Marshawn Brooks are also some tournament guys. While Kyle Anderson, 41, Mike Conley, 67. Mike Conley, 67, is pretty juicy, I think, over on the old DraftKings. Let's go through to the next game now. We've got the Lakers. They are taking on the Phoenix Suns. The Lakers are favored by 2.5 points, and the total is 236.5. It's a massive spread. It is the highest of the day. Is this going to be the Lakers' first win? No Brandon Ingram, no Rajon Rondo. So there is some options here, no doubt. At point guard, Lonzo Ball's at 7,000. A good opportunity for him against Phoenix. He did well against Phoenix last season. Defense is going to be fairly optional, I think, in this game. So I think Lonzo at 7,000 with a limited minutes limit is worth a look. I'm not ready to look at him as a cash lock. While Isaiah Kanan's at 4,400. Again, defense optional, high spread. A tournament sort of a player. The shooting guards is where the value comes in. 8,000 for Devin Booker. Very, very tough to go past that. That is a strong, strong cash play, I believe. Well, Josh the Hitman Hart up to 6,400 on FanDuel. That's getting pretty steep for the Hitman, but I don't think that it's outrageous considering just how much better than Kentavious Caldwell-Pope he is. And Caldwell-Pope is down to 3,700 because he has had a high score this year of 10 points. Small forwards, LeBron James. 11,500 is as safe as it gets, really. No problem with using him. While Trevor Ariza at 5,200. A good game to start the season. Dreadful since then. I have no interest in Trevor Ariza or Lance Stevenson. While Tony Warren Jr. has hitting shots at an astoundingly high rate. He's at 5,700, but the minutes aren't pushing up. He has done very well against the Lakers in the past. I don't know if I can really go in here for cash, though. I'm just not sure that the shots are going to fall at the level that they have been. I think he's shooting, 65% on threes or something crazy like that. But 5,700 is not a bad price to go and look at using TJ Warren. the power forwards, the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, had almost 50 last game. He probably won't get to that level, but I think he can get to 7,200 in a more familiar role, playing alongside LeBron and not trying to be a center. Ryan Anderson is nothing, while Josh Jackson is also nothing. At the center spot, DeAndre Ayton, 7,700, struggled last game, still had 45 points. I think that he can get you a 40-plus here against the Lakers with their lack of centers. And the Lakers center is JaVale McGee. And the lowest score JaVale has had this season is 32. That's pretty good. Love the matchup for JaVale. If the minutes get high for him in a high-paced game, then I think he can break through this number. I think he's all right. I prefer Ayton. Obviously, I'm spending more money for it. But I think McGee isn't someone to necessarily avoid. On DraftKings, LeBron at 11,100. We're not really going past him too much. Ayton, Ball, Kuzma, all pretty decent options. I think Booker is less favorable on DraftKings at 8,300. And the hitman Josh Hart at 5,800 is in play as well. Let's go through to the last game of the night. We're finally there. The Washington Wizards and the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are favored by 9, and the total is 235.5. No Dwight Howard, a questionable Yan Mahinmi. Klay Thompson is probable to play after hurting his ankle last game, and Sean Livingston is also questionable with a bruise on his knee. John Wall is at 9,400. John Wall has been playing fairly well this season. He's got a pretty good record against Steph and the Warriors. I think he's a relatively safe cash type of a guy, while Steph at 9,300 also just crushing it almost every night. And the same as Wall, he does very well in their head-to-head matchup. They go off against each other quite often. Shooting guards, Rivers, Iguodala, no. Bradley Beal, 8,000, has been pretty strong. I'm not really feeling Beal here. I think this might be fade territory. Has really struggled against Klay and the Warriors before. I'm not into him here, unfortunately. And Klay, I think at 6,400, is not really worth the look. Otto Porter's at 6,400. Strong game from Otto last time out. 36 points. He is at 6,400. Maybe. Good record against the Warriors as well. Done well in the last three matchups. 43-point average. I feel okay with it. I don't think it's a supreme option. While Kevin Durant down to 9,900, it feels pretty impossible to leave that alone. Although Durant hasn't quite been the same guy this season, averaging 47 points so far this year. But at 9,900, it is a tough one to pass up on. Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
He's at 3,700. The Wizards are likely going to go a lot more small ball, so I think he would be a lovely tournament guy to throw in there. While Kelly Oubre at 42, I think he might see his percentage rise a little bit after last game where he put up 35 points in the 39 minutes. I'm not expecting him to do that again, so I think that he might be someone that I fade off here. Power forward Draymond, 7,700. That's a no from me. While Kevon Looney's at 39. Had one big game and then a couple of real stinkers. I think there's still some tournament upside in Looney at a sub 4,000 price. Markeith also went bananas last game. 45 points for Markeith in 25 minutes. Probably not realistic, but if they're going to play him at center more at 5,700, I actually like him if they're going to do that. The centers, you've got Damo Jones and Yan Mahinmi. 4,200 for Damo. I don't see the upside in Mahinmi. I'm not really getting involved in that at all either. On DraftKings, look, Wall at 86 and Beal at 75, both more appealing than on FanDuel. Probably more Wall than Beal here. 6,000 for Otto and 97 for Durant. I'd obviously take Durant over him. I'm still not feeling Otto significantly. And 98 for Steph makes him a worse option on DraftKings than he is on FanDuel. My DraftKings stud of the day is Karl Anthony Towns at 8,200. I think he can get back that value pretty comfortably. He averages 42 DraftKings points the last three times against Toronto. My best value play is Nick Batum at 5,500, and it's against the Bulls, and that's probably all you need to know about that one. On FanDuel, Kevin Love, 8,500, averages 43 points this season so far, and now he gets the Nets, so he's my stud of the day, and my value play is a $3,700 Cameron Payne. On Yahoo, Kawhi, the fun guy.
I'm a fun guy.
He's $39 on Yahoo. He continues to be underpriced. While my value play is a minimum salary Nemanja Bjelica. It's more of a tournament type option. We don't know what Jaeger's going to do, but at minimum salary, there's something there. For Moneyball, my stud is Levine at 8,000. The shooting will cool off, but without Dunn, the ball might be in his hands a bit more. And my best value is Cameron Payne at 4,000. And on Draft Stars, my stud is Kawhi at 16,230. He averages 52 Draft Stars points the last three times against Minnesota, while my value play is Chetty Osman at 7,880. And as I've written there on the graphic, you can see Hopefully Tyronn Lue does not stuff this up. Now we're back in business with the best bets. Got one on the board. So now I'm going to go with today's one. Wednesday, October 24th. I'm taking the over in the Spurs-Pacers game. It's listed as 213. I think we can get the over going there. So let's get on a roll and get this best bet going. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and the Locked On Network at LockedOnNBANet. And subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify. Check out today's sponsor, BlueChew.com, using that promo code LockedOn for your free first sample. And go and on YouTube, hit the thumbs up, hit the subscribe, and leave a comment below. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Patrick Beverley.